who that clue like. That's the guy where exactly.
The Mishnah beginning of Epi Pesachim tells us that the halacha requires that one drink salikosos at the Leil HaSedah. So we mentioned the other day that the simple pshat in the halacha is that this is only a mitzvah midrabbanan, and the Rambam has a unique understanding. So the Rambam says that this is a kiyum in the Torah of chol dovedo chayav maharas asatzu kliyotzim mitzrayim. So by drinking the dalikosos, one demonstrates that they're derecheiros, so that would also be a fulfillment of a mitzvah in the Torah. But the simple pshat in the halacha is that this mitzvah is only midrabbanan. It's for this reason that the Mishnah Berurah writes that there is a machlokes in the later poskim how to be mishayer, all the different shiurim, how to figure out what a kezayis is, what a kebeis is, what a revius is. All the shiurim are all interdependent, all relation to one to another, and there are different ways of calculating exactly how this translates into our modern day equivalent of measurement. So the Mishnah Berurah has an assumption that concerning all these different shitas about whether something is kezayis, not a kezayis. So we, Mishnah Berurah treats this as a suffix. We're not really sure how to be mishael out of these things properly. So therefore, when it comes to mitzvahs d'oraisa, we should earn this out of caution. We should try to use what we call the larger shiurim. When it comes to mitzvahs d'rabbanan, then we have a right to use the smaller shiurim. So Mishnah Berurah draws a distinction between achilas matzah, which is d'oraisa, in contrast to dalakosos, is only d'rabbanan. So matzah d'oraisa, you have to go for a larger kezayis if you're able to. When it comes to dalakosos, then the shiur would be the smaller shiur, would be the shiur of a revius, which would be sufficient, according to some poskim, even the smaller amount. So then the Mishnah Berurah throws in a little bit of a monkey wrench into this. The Mishnah Berurah says that b'medivah mamurim, that you're allowed to calculate with the smaller shiur, that's when you have a Seder night on a regular night of the week. But when you have the Seder night on Friday night, like this year, so then you have to even treat the first of the dalakosos, you have to treat like a chashash d'oraisa, because the first of the dalakosos is kiddush. So we mentioned that when you drink the dalakosos, there are multiple kiyumim. So in the first of the dalakosos is a kiyum of dalakosos. It's also kiddush. It's kiddush of Yom Tov, kiddush of Shabbos. And the Mishnah Berurah says that since Friday night kiddush is a mitzvah d'oraisa, so the holiday is, you have to opt for the larger shiur. So this Mishnah Berurah is very mechudesh on many levels, because even though Friday night kiddush is a d'oraisa, but the obligation of yayin, the obligation of a kos, of a revius, is only midrabbanan. There's one day in Tosfos in Maseches Pesachim of Kuvav that entertains the possibility of kiddush ala kos being d'oraisa on Friday night. The Gemara just says Tana Rabbanan Zochas Yom Shabbos Zechreil Zechreil Yayin. So most of the opinions of Tosfos and most of the opinions of Mishnah, the Rambam and others say that the statement of Chazal ala Yayin, that's only midrabbanan. Zechreil is d'oraisa. You have to make kiddush, that's a din d'oraisa. But the fact you have to do it ala Yayin, that's only midrabbanan. There's one day in Tosfos that says no, that even the Yayin itself is d'oraisa. And then there's a Rashi, it's a fake Rashi, Maseches Nozi, we don't have the authentic Rashi, we have what's called the Mefarsh. It's in the place of the Gemara, it's been printed in the place of Rashi, but it's one of the other Rishonim. So the Mefarsh in Maseches Nozi also holds that way. He holds that Yayin for Kiddush is a Din D'oraisa, but most of the Rishonim hold that way. And in the later post Kiddush Shulchan Aruch, we don't really accept that. So the Mishnah Berurah is a little bit strange. The Mishnah Berurah is saying that you have to make Kiddush on the larger Shiur on Friday night because Kiddush is D'oraisa. It's not true. Kiddush is d'oraisa, but kiddush on the coast is not d'oraisa. So somehow the Mishnah Berurah thought that's also called a suffix d'oraisa. You have to treat the whole kiddush on Friday night with chol chumras of d'oraisa, and even though the yayin itself is only d'rabbanan, like Mishnah Berurah himself paskins back in the Chol Shabbos, but since the mitzvah is d'oraisa, so the yayin has to also up the ante a little bit. You have to give a larger shiur. The Mishnah Berurah is assuming that kiddush on Yom Tov is only d'rabbanan because he only has this chumra that you have to go for the larger shiur on this year when it's Friday night. When it's on a regular weeknight, then the Mishnah Berurah concedes you can go for the smaller shiur, indicating that he really believes that kiddush on Yom Tov is only d'rabbanan, which is also a shaila. So this is the Mishnah Berurah following the ikvos to Magid Mishnah. The Magid Mishnah Hilchos Shabbos says that kiddush on Yom Tov is only d'rabbanan. The Torah says Zochas Yom Shabbos. Shabbos means Saturday, doesn't mean Yom Tov. And the Rambam doesn't seem to say that. The Rambam himself seems to write that Kiddush on Yom Tov is also D'oraisa. Zochas Yom Shabbos, Shabbos means Yom Shvisa. Whatever there's a mitzvah of Shvisa with Melacha, there's a mitzvah of Kiddush Ben Torah. So one could have either disagreed with the Mishnah Berurah Gamrei and said that both Shabbos and Yom Tov Kiddush requires a larger Shiur because they're both Shilas of D'oraisa. Or one could have disagreed with the Mishnah the other direction and say neither requires the larger shear because the coast is the Rabbanah by both cases. So the Mishnah Berurah is unique psak. The Shabbat is here and Yom Tov, no, so that's a questionable psak. But that's what my sense of the Mishnah Berurah writes. That Kiddush on Friday night, you should try to opt for a larger shear. When we speak about Dalakosis, so the standard for Dalakosis is that the first of the Kosis is Kiddush. So the Gemara says that the Gemara gives a certain series of dinim about what constitutes Yayin for the purposes of Kiddush. So the Gemara has a klal in the sixth pech of Baba Basra that what to do in Baba Basra. For the Gemara there is talking about selling wine. The Mecher is a Yayin, so it's speaking about all the details of what constitutes wine. So in the middle of that sugya, the Gemara takes a digression for a blot about the standards of Kiddush for Friday night. So the Gemara says a klal that only Yayin that's royal and nasr, agabi a mizbeach, only wine that can be brought on the mizbeach is kosher for the purposes of Kiddush. So that's a big machlokes Rishonim, what that means. So the Rambam quotes the opinion that it means kipshita, that if for whatever reason the yayin is off limits on the mizbeach, then it's off limits for Kiddush. And other Rishonim say, no, it just means that the wine is deteriorated, the wine tastes bad, smells bad, whatever. It's a yuchi kind of a wine, so you wouldn't bring that as a korban, then it's not right to use that for Kiddush either. But let's say the wine is posel gabi mizbeach for some technical reasons, so then that wouldn't disqualify the wine for Kiddush. That's the machlekes that we showed him about Yayin Mevushel. You have wine and you cook up the wine. Why would you do something as silly as that as cooking up the wine to prevent the goy from touching it? Because if a goy touches Yayin, it traces the wine. But if it's Yayin Mevushel, so the Gemara says that's not called Yayin, that's not called Yayin for the purposes of Stam Yayinam if a goy touches it. So we like to cook up our wine to avoid kashrus problems. So according to some Rishonim, that would disqualify the wine for Kiddush, that would disqualify the wine for Dalakosis. And our minig is not the way. Our minig is like the other Rishonim, that since the bishul doesn't really ruin the wine to such a significant amount, so it still would be kosher for a Kiddush, it would still be kosher for the Seder. Some people like to be mocked, but they want to use dafka, non-mavushal wine for the Seder. They want to be yaitzei, all the sheet doesn't pay tonight. So you have to be very careful if you do that, you have to make sure the goyim aren't around to touch the wine. But if you're nervous about that, so you just use regular mavushal wine like most people use the rest of the year as well. The Gemara in the sixth pech of Baba Basra, the way Samishan read, the Ramban read the Gemara to mean that white wine is not acceptable for Kiddush. So that's a question. We don't really pass like that. We paskin that white wine is also acceptable, since there's one opinion in Rishonim, Ramban's view, that paskin that white wine is no good. So therefore, our minhag is that if you have red wine and white wine and they're both of equal quality, so we would opt for the red wine, both for Kiddush as well as for the Seder. And but if Lamaisa you like the white wine better, so then even Mechad Chili would be permitted to use the white wine. Shmir Shabbos quotes that there was some poskim who maintained that whole kapeid of the Ramban based on the Gemara not to use white wine, that's only bisman when the white wine is really, really low quality. Like in days of Chazal, that was somehow a lesser, that was an inferior wine. Bisman Hazeh, you have a $100 bottle of white wine and you have a $5 bottle of some bubbly, sugary red wine or something, so some posts can say that our white wine is such a high quality wine that's mutter even lechadchila. So yesh v'yesh. So most the rest of the year, many people have the practice. They make kiddush on white wine even lechadchila. Many people are not even machped on this because they follow those achronim who say that bisman hazeh maybe this whole thing doesn't apply. And there are some more machped dafka to use red wine if they can. But nice at the end of the day, if there's white wine and red wine and the white wine is not a higher quality, then there's nothing wrong with using white wine.
Do you want to use dafka wine, or can you use grapefruit?
We'll talk about grapefruit in a second. So our minhag is that many people try to use red wine at the Seder. I mean, again, not ma'akev. If one has a good quality white wine, that would be okay as well. There were some communities that used to have the minhag dafka to use white wine because they were nervous about blood libels. So, Baruch Hashem, hopefully we don't have any real blood libels anymore. But there were communities in Europe that would have to use white wine because of those concerns.
Are there any issues with somebody
Yeah, if somebody's in Mechal Shabbos before Hesia and they touch the wine, that could throw into question the kashrus of the wine. So that's a big question, whether we have Mechal Shabbos before Hesia b'zman hazeh. So we definitely have people in Mechal Shabbos before Hesia. The question is whether halachically they're Mechal Shabbos before Hesia. So Rashi writes in the beginning of Maseches Chulin that Mechal Shabbos before Hesia is only Dinuk Akum because he's kofir b'maaseh bereishis, because he doesn't believe in the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. So that's like an Ovid Avodah Zarah. He's denying HaKadosh Baruch Hu's existence or denying that he's the Borei Olam. Let's say you have a fellow who doesn't deny the Borei Olam. He just likes to do business, likes to open a store on Shabbos. So the Aruch Haner has a tshuva where he writes that if a person is just really truly believes in a Kadosh Baruch Hu, but he's just Mechal Shabbos, this time, so then that wouldn't create a Mechal Shabbos of Hesia. So that's what the Aruch Haner was talking about. There used to be people in Germany, he was a Rav, who they believed in the Kodesh Baruch Hu, they even kept Shabbos a little bit. They would make Kiddush on Friday night, their wives would bench lech, they would do it through the Shabbos, and then Shabbos morning they would go to work. So he writes, such people, Nebuch, they have a big Yetzirah, because they don't want to lose their parnasa. On the other hand, it's hard to call them a koif of my celebration. They just make Kiddush Friday night. He picks up his own cup of wine, that's not mavushal, so he traipses it up, he's making Kiddush. How can you say that he traipses up the wine? So that phenomenon used to exist in America in the early 1900s. So Nebuch, there are a lot of people who came to America and they couldn't get a job. They didn't work on Shabbos. Nebuch, they would work on Shabbos also. So we're not justifying that, we're not condoning that, but it's hard to call such people Mechal Shabbos or Fahesia. They would make Kiddush by the night, their wives would bench lech, they would even eat Suda, but the mice, they went to work on Shabbos morning. Many of them would even daven Shabbos morning. Those who know a little bit about the history of America, that's how the Hashkama Minyanim started. Why did anyone think of davening Hashkama Shabbos morning? Now we think Hashkama is for the firmies, the guys who like to get up early and then they'll sit and learn all morning. The original Hashkama Minyanim in America were made for the Mechal Shabbos. They were made for the people who had to be in the office by 9 o'clock. They would come at 7 o'clock, they would daven and be done with Shachris at 8:30, and then they would run off, make Kiddush, and then they would run off to work. So if anyone tells you that source of Ashkenaz Hashkama Minyanim started in America. So the Chaner holds that you can't call such people who go to Hashkama, can't call them Mechal Shabbos of Hesia, because they still, if they really were kaifer, Maisa Bereishis, they wouldn't come to shul and sing Kelot. So the fact that they're coming to daven Shachris, that's a riot, that they're not really kaifer. So what if you have not people not like that? What if you have people who really don't really believe in Hashem, don't really believe in anything? So if they're a Tinek Shenishba, so then they also probably wouldn't trip off the wine. So it's hard, Bizman is there, to make these assessments. That's why we should try to be careful. If there are people who are not up to par around, we should try to use Yain Mavushal. B'diyeb, we use Yain Mavushal. If the people are not really L'chachasnik, you know, real mazed Mechal Shabbos, they probably wouldn't trip off the wine. B'diyeb. We usually assume the Gemara says in Bava Basra that you can use grape juice for Kiddush on Friday night. The Gemara says you can squeeze some grapes on Friday afternoon, even though it hasn't had a chance to ferment. So you can just squeeze the grapes, then make Kiddush an hour later, and that's perfectly okay. That's not our grape juice. That grape juice is made years before, and it's been treated with all kinds of chemicals, and it doesn't ferment. The grape juice that Chazal was talking about was the old, I mean, you might just squeeze the grapes. So anyone who's in cold is there someone else? Well, so do you remember Mary Yaakov's grape juice? Well, the last Friday night, right? So I went with him a couple of days before the end of the summer. We went to a kerem, and we did all the mitzvahs of the kerem, and we took some, got a lot of grapes, and we were mafish, took some ice, all the grapes, and then he had loads of grapes left over, so he turned them into grape juice. So he put them into a blender, and he made it into mama's grape juice, and he used the grape juice on the last Friday night. I wasn't ready to leave back to America, so he wanted to give me some grapes to take back, but then I realized I'm going to get caught at customs. This is something they don't like. It's one thing, you know, you can get away with your half a, you know, half of a pack of bubble gum or something, but if you come back with a container of fresh grape juice that was just made an hour ago, so that's probably something they're not going to like too much at customs, so I didn't take it with me. But he made Kiddush on that. That's Mamash Tegemar. So that's the grape juice you could use. So most folks can assume you could use that grape juice also, even though that grape juice has been treated with chemicals, kind of mycelach, so we assume that it's probably okay also. When it comes to Pesach night, so Ramesha had a chiddush, that Pesach night you have to use something that's wine, because if it doesn't have the ability to be mesameach, the real sense of the word, so then that wouldn't, not that you're supposed to get drunk on Pesach night, but it has to have a little bit of yayin yisamach, otherwise it's not called derech heirus. And the Rav disagreed with that. The Rav said that as long as it's wine that you like, I like grape juice. I like grape juice better than wine. So the Rav felt that a person could be yeltsin even lechatchila with grape juice. So yesh v'yesh, different opinions about this. So those who are over the age of 21 should try to drink wine if they can. Those who are under the age of 21, so they shouldn't be drinking wine anyway. So then they should consult their rabbanim to try to figure out what the appropriate way to fulfill, whether you can fulfill it with their grape juice.
Mixing wine with grape juice?
Yeah, I don't know, I'm not such a big fan of it because it probably tastes terrible. I'm just kidding, it's there. So the goal was to make a shtia reva, so when you mix wine and grape juice, usually tastes miserable. Okay.
So if
according to the Rav, you can use grape juice. According to Rav Moshe, there's an objective shia that has to be derech eiros. Not called derech eiros,
like you hate it.
Yeah, that's what Rav Moshe held, but the Rav disagrees with that. So yesh v'yesh, different opinions.
In terms of the light color grape juice versus the regular grape color grape juice, they're different, or?
What do you mean light colored?
Sometimes they have like a light colored grape.
Is it white?
Yeah, white.
Is it white? So that's a white grape. So white grape just depends on the same sugi about white wine. So according to the Ramban, that would be a problem. So it's probably better to use the regular grape juice for the seder. Okay. We spoke a lot about matzah, right? Matzah we spoke about the other day, no? Anyway, okay, so we'll talk about another mitzvah. We'll run out of time. We'll go back to matzah. So there's another mitzvah that we fulfill at the seder. That's the mitzvah of maror. So maror is a mitzvah in the Torah, but only bisman when you eat the korban pesach. When there's no korban pesach, then maror is only midirabbanan. How much maror do you have to eat? So the pasha dvarim is you have to eat a kezayis of maror, the mitzvah achila. So there is a rush that discusses this. According to some, discusses this topic, and the rush discusses why exactly you have to eat a kezayis of maror. So it sounds a little bit from the rush that the only reason why you have to eat a kezayis of maror is because you're going to make a bracha. Sheir kedishar mitzvahs alachilas maror. So ain achilah pachas b'kezayis. So therefore, you have to eat a kezayis, implying that if not for the fact that you're making a bracha, so maybe the mitzvah maror itself wouldn't require a kezayis. Why? Because maybe one could argue that the Torah never really says you have to lay dapshem b'shem tochal maror. It says a matzah sumarorim yachluhu, that you have to eat the korban pesach in the context of maror. So since it doesn't use a lashon achilah about maror itself, so maybe maror wouldn't actually require kezayis. That's most of the rush. So the shekazayah has a whole discussion about that. Is that true or not? Halacha, you have to eat a kezayis anyway. Either you have to eat a kezayis because the mitzvah maror dictates a kezayis, or you have to eat a kezayis because the lashon of the bracha dictates a kezayis. At the end of the day, you have to eat a kezayis and maror no matter what. What exactly constitutes maror for these purposes? So the Mishnah spells out different minim that are acceptable for maror. The Mishnah gives you some simanim, and then it gives you a few examples of minim, and then we're not 100% sure what some of these particular species are. So one of the species that we know for certain is lettuce, because the Gemara describes as chasa. So Rashi in the spot gives us the old Latin word lituga, which is the word for lettuce in old French and in Latin. So that's what we assume is perhaps the best of the mine mora. The Yerushalmi raises the question when it talks about lettuce. The Yerushalmi says lettuce isn't really all that bitter. So how can you be yaitzei the mitzvah mora with that? So the Yerushalmi says if you leave it in the ground long enough, it'll turn bitter. So the Chaznir says, it's good, you have to leave it in the ground long enough. And if you take it out beforehand, so then it would be a problem. And the minigrel was not like that. Most of us just use regular lettuce. And I mean regular, romaine lettuce, you know, we just, even though it doesn't really taste bitter, it doesn't taste anything. Romaine lettuce is very, very, almost a nothing taste. So we assume that once it's called the min moro, even though right now it's not bitter, that would be okay. So that's what that's the lechet chila to use for the Seder. One has to be very careful with the romaine lettuces and all the lettuces, at different degrees of checking. One has to make sure that one doesn't violate any sum of taloim. If you there's a din min haTorah that you're not allowed to eat bugs, then there's a concern. Let's say you have a particular vegetable, I don't see a bug on it, but there's a good chance that there is a bug there. Depends how good a chance there is. See, there's more than a 50% chance that there's a bug there, then I'm for sure not allowed to eat it. That's a din min haTorah. What if there's I'm not allowed to eat until I check to make sure for certain that there's no bug? What if it's not a 50% chance there's a bug? There's a 20%. One out of five of these vegetables have bugs in it. Am I mechuyav to check or not? So the Gemara says in the beginning of Maseches Chulin, that when you shecht an animal, so there's no need to check for all the trephes. You don't have to open up an animal and check its heart, its stomach, its brain, even though there's a chance that there may be a hole in one of these internal organs. It's very unlikely, and the rove is that's probably not. Therefore, min haTorah, you're allowed to rely on rove. We spoke about this rove behemoth enum treifus. Nevertheless, the Rishonim point out from the Gemara that you have to check the lungs. Why do you have to check the lungs? Because the lungs is what's called the miyat hamotzoi, because there's a good chance that there may be a problem. How good a chance is it? How likely is it there's a hole in the lungs? So the Mishkanos Yaakov writes, Mishkanos Yaakov is a Tamar, Chaim Veloshna, so he writes in a tshuva that it's one intention, that approximately 10% of animals have problems in their lungs, so therefore the halacha requires that you have to check for that, what's called the Mir HaMotzi. Is that a Din Min HaTorah? Is that a Din Min HaRabbanan? So that's not clear. So the Mishkanos Yaakov claims that may be a Dachshad of a Deraisa, maybe required Min HaTorah to check for Mir HaMotzi, and Neshe Chochma, the whole Arichah is against it, why he thinks there's only a Din Min HaRabbanan. Usually assume that's only a din midrabbanan. So this idea that whenever you have an unbelievable rove, you don't have to worry about it, even midrabbanan. We have a mir hamotzo, you have already a 10% chance, that's the problem. This is not only true by bedikas for treifas, this is true by other areas of shailas or sveikas as well. So anytime I have a latest asafik about something, and I'm comfortable enough to say the facts are that there's less than a 10% chance of being a problem, then there's no chavis bedik at all. If there's more than 10% chance and there would be a chavis bedika. So now you have different vegetables, so let's say carrots. So what are the odds that there's a bug inside a carrot? Very, very unlikely. We haven't seen too many bugs in carrots. So one is not mukhrif to open up your carrots and start peeling away and seeing is there a bug in the carrot. We assume that there's no bug in the carrot. I don't know, maybe the green part of the carrot, maybe the leafy part, nobody eats that part anyway. Let's say cucumbers. So cucumbers, when was the last time you saw a bug inside a cucumber? Very unlikely. So you're not mukhrif to open up your cucumbers and inspect your cucumbers. But if you have vegetables, you have fruits, you have other things that are that have more than a 50% chance of having a bug there, so that's a din minatori you would have to be mevar. If it's less than 50%, more than 10%, then you would be mechuyev to check. That's the chiyuv levarer. So that's why a lot of vegetables that exist today, a lot of the vegetables are mukhsuf b'taloyim, a lot of vegetables have this concern. So you have to talk to the experts. I don't know enough about which is which. You have to talk to the people who spend the whole day checking for bugs, and they'll tell you which vegetables are higher level of mukhsuf b'taloyim, which are lower level. So romaine lettuce has always traditionally been one of those that is always problematic. The romaine lettuce has a lot of bugs in it, so you have to check it to make sure that it's a clear bug. So in the olden days, people would sit and check. So they'd sit leaf by leaf and check and hold to the light and then wash it out and soak it and wash it and check to make sure that's clean of bugs. Today, we don't live in a world like most people don't have time to do that kind of stuff, don't want to bother doing that stuff. So it's all done for you. So that's what we do is most people today, they buy their romaine lettuce from pre-checked. They buy the romaine lettuce from sources that have been grown, either grown in greenhouses in such a way that the numbers are almost non-existent, there's many bugs, or they grow them in special ways, and they have special ways of checking and special ways of washing that have knocked the numbers down, but they're below the point of requiring you to do checking. Those are the different Hamisha brands that exist in the market today. Again, they're different styles and different standards, but the basic approach is, the goal is to get it down to the point where there's nothing to be concerned about. You know, once in a blue moon, there may be a bug in that also, but that's so insignificant, and therefore we're not obligated. When I eat meat, there's a chance that there may be a hole in the stomach also, but the halacha doesn't require me to worry about that. So when a person wants to be yotzei mara with lettuces, so the proper thing to do is to buy one of these frummy kinds of brands and whatever the standards of these brands are.
We're mentioning a lot of the shirim, but what is the shirim in terms of like actual quality of mar or of masa?
So we'll talk about that. Okay, we'll try to talk about that. All right. So good. So we've identified our mara, almost identified. Then we have other kinds of minim that have been used traditionally. One of them in the Ashkenazi communities has been a custom for many, many years. They use the chrein, they use horseradish. Now, when you speak about using horseradish, it has to be non-processed. It can't be that you go to the store, you buy a jar of gold horseradish or something. So because that's mixed with vinegar, and once it's mixed with vinegar, so that the Mishnah says that disqualifies the mara. So it has to be raw. You just, you know, like your great grandmothers would do, they just, you know, grate up some white horseradish and try. So horseradish was always tricky because we're not quite sure that was one of the minim of mara. For many years, nobody used horseradish in Eastern Europe, and they couldn't get lettuce, so they started using horseradish. So some poskim were of the opinion that it wasn't even good. It wasn't even mara altogether. The only reason that they sanctioned using it in Eastern Europe, the Pasha couldn't get any other mara, so they used that, zeicha, whatever. But others said no, others said this is an acceptable method of a mara. So again, those who have a family tradition to use horseradish, they use horseradish. Those who don't have that absolute chayk lo yavor tradition, so they use lettuce. Lettuce is the more correct of all the minei mara. How much mara do you have to eat? So again, we said this year is a kezayas. Mas is also kezayas. But there are different ways of calculating kezayas. There are different shiurim, different deraisas, rabbanans. So for matzah, a little bit more machmer, for mara, a little bit more mekel, for the rabbanan, a little bit more mekel. So tachlis, how much does it boil down to? Depends on who you ask. So usually the answer is, depends who we're talking for. Are we talking for a young, healthy person? Are we talking about for an elderly person who has trouble chewing all these kinds of food? So for a young, healthy yeshiva bachar, so we would tell him if you're using a hand matzah, about a half a hand matzah. So that's the chol hadeis, that's the kezayis, the revach, gomor, non-belishum sofik. If you're normal consistency, some matzah a little bit thinner, some a little bit thicker, but you get a normal size of matzah, so you get approximately a half a hand matzah, that should be a good kezayis for chol dover. So if you eat that for multi matzah and eat that for afikomen, so you're good to go. Korach, you can use a little bit smaller, it's only the rabban anyway, so that you can shave down a little bit on the matzah if you want to. Well, for those who are not up to par of eating, so then we would give them smaller shiurim. Small shiurim would be a quarter of a hand matzah, so maybe less than that a little bit. So again, they should consult the Rav to see what the bare bone minimum is in terms of achilas matzah. Maror is a little harder to cheshbon out. So maror, you take a couple of good leaves of romaine lettuce and three leaves. I can't tell you exactly how much it is. You take a couple of leaves of maror, and that's good to go. Okay. those who are eating horseradish, it's hard to eat. You have to give an ounce of it's very hard to eat a kazayis of horseradish.
The Goyisha brands of lettuce?
Yeah.
Are there like some regulations or
so
something?
So the Goyisha brands of lettuce are usually just what they say, triple washed lettuce. So it depends on who you ask in the field. So many of the probably all the Hashkacha organizations today don't rely on that for treating that as being clean. So they'll wash it and they'll recheck it themselves to some degree, or they won't rely on that altogether. So I wouldn't assume that romaine lettuce you could just buy in even the prepacked stuff, unless it's one of the firmer brands, or whether you can actually sit in and wash it and check it yourself.
How much percentage of machine matzah?
Machine matzah. So again, for a healthy person, it's probably about 2/3 of a machine matzah. For someone not healthy, about a half of that, or so a third or so, give or take. Okay, but again, these numbers are really, really approximate. These are probably on the higher. These numbers are on the higher end. Those who really, really need to eat less, so they should. They can look at all the books and then find the smallest shear, and that's probably the correct shear. Okay, and even though shear would play higher than the real kazai is pretty small. Well, owls aren't so big. Okay. When it comes to dalakosa, so the bare bone minimum shear is 3 ounces. So 3 ounces is also mikra. Then good enough, that's the size of the kosa. And then lechatchila, one should drink rov kosa of each of the kosas. One who can't even do that, so should drink malilugma, which is probably around the same as that also. If you have a bigger kosa, you drink a larger amount. If you have a smaller kosa, you drink rov of a ravi. It's about 1.5 ounces or so, and that's good enough. Okay, so again, so we spoke a little bit about the mitzvah of narcosis, a little bit about the mitzvah of morah. What other mitzvahs do we have? Matzah, we spoke about already. Did we talk about matzah already? What did we say last time? We just spoke about the zman matzah. We didn't really talk about chetzah matzah, did we?
Yeah, we did a whole segment.
We did? But that was about the zman.
Yeah.
No, the earlier. Okay, so talk a little bit about what constitutes matzah. So in order to be matzah, so the Mishnah says it has to be from the chmeshes minei dagan. It has to come from the 5 species of grain. So one of the 5 species of grain, so wheat, and barley, those we know for a fact, that's chitus ayra, and we think we know what the other three are also. We strongly suspect that the other three are oats, rye, and spelt. How do we know that? Because Rashi tells us that. Rashi on the spot gives us the old French words, which are the old that Latin words for all of those things. He gives us the old, if you Google those the words of Rashi, so you'll see those correspond to the old French words of those three species. So not everyone agreed to it. There were some Mishanim who questioned whether these were actually the official Chameshes Minei Dagan. That's why there are some people who will only eat matzah. Nobody eats barley matzah. I don't think it's going to come out very good. But that's why some people in Machmen only to eat the wheat matzah. Most of the matzah out there in the market, regular matzah, is wheat matzah. Those who have allergies, it's hard for them to digest the wheat matzah, so then they eat either the spelt matzah or the oat matzah, and they're following, again, what's been the traditional approach, Rashi's approach, that those are also acceptable. So those who have to can eat the other matzahs also. But again, regular matzah has always traditionally been wheat. One can have regular wheat, you can have whole wheat. It's all the same in terms of fulfilling the mitzvah. Whole wheat's a little healthier, but they're all the same. Okay. When we speak about matzah, so the halacha is that matzah not only is made up of a species of grain, but it has to be mixed with a liquid. Otherwise, it's kind of hard to mix it into matzah. So you have to mix it with liquid. What kind of liquid? So the halacha is you have to mix a dafka with water. If you mix it with other kind of juices, that becomes what's called matzah ashira. Matzah ashira is not acceptable. The Torah says it has to be lechem oni. There is a machlokes poskim. Let's say a person doesn't have any lechem oni. All they have is matzah ashira. So some poskim say that you could be yotzi matzah with matzah ashira, just you're not yotzi the additional kim of lechem oni. They're almost like two halachas. Erev Tochel Matzah is good, even Matzah Shira, but the extra added dimension of Lechemoni you would lose out. And others say no, that Lechemoni defines the Mitzvah Matzah, that if you don't have Lechemoni, so it's not called Matzah Amur Batar, and you wouldn't be Yaitse at all. Again, this is never going to come up. A person's going to, hopefully it's not going to come up, a person's healthy and eats regular Matzah, one shouldn't be eating Matzah Shira. Ashkenazim have a custom not to eat Matzah Shira the whole week anyway for other reasons, because of concerns of Chametz. There's a machlekes in the Gemara, and we showed him a whole sugya about can matzah shira ever become chametz altogether. So in deference to certain chumras of Rashi and Benatam, we have Ashkenazim have adopted the custom, unless in case of great need of cholim or something, that we don't eat fruit juice kind of matzahs. Also, one should be careful. There are a lot of products on the market that are made of matzah shira. A lot of people are not aware of this. A lot of the matzah crackers, a lot of that stuff, you have to always look on the side and see it. Very often it says matzah shira, and it usually has a warning that says that should only be eaten by those who are sick. Those of Ashkenazi practice wouldn't eat those kinds of things under normal circumstances. Years ago, they used to sell matzah shir products all the time, and they didn't even put a warning. They put a little line in Yiddish that would say, ayin kitta shulchan aruch, about why you shouldn't be eating this product. No one knew what that meant even. No one, most people didn't even know, never heard of the Kiddush Shulchan Aruch. Then years later, they decided to up it up a little bit. They would write in Yiddish that it should only be in by people who are sick. A lot of people didn't know how to read Yiddish. So then eventually they wrote it in English. Now it says in English that Ashkenazim shouldn't eat these products unless they're ill. So you should have to be careful not to buy these kinds of products. In order to fulfill the mitzvah matzah, one has to eat matzah shmura. So what exactly does the shmura matzah mean? So that's a big machlekes in the Rishonim, where the shmura matzah means, we spoke a little bit about this last year in Sukkah, Rashi sheet in a few places, is that shmura matzah means that shmura l'shem mitzvah matzah. That the same way you have to make tzitzit l'shma, make tefillin l'shma, make sefer l'shma, so you have to bake the matzahs l'shma as well. That therefore, according to Rashi, it only applies when there's a mitzvah chilas matzah. There's only a mitzvah chilas matzah on the first night, on the first two nights of what's large. But let's say third day chalamot, you're going on your trip to the Bronx Zoo, there's no need to eat shmur matzah. There's no mitzvah chilas matzah. And the Rambam disagrees. The Rambam says that shmur matzah is not a din in the mitzvah shel matzah, rather it's a din in chimutz. It's a higher level of requirement, it's a higher level of care to make sure that the matzah isn't chametz. Even though we know it's not really chametz, but the fact that we wash it and wash it careful with it even earlier than along the way, so that elevates it to a high degree of care that it's no longer chametz. Therefore, according to the Rambam, the Magen Mishnah points out, you shouldn't eat non-shmur the whole week either. So according to Rashi, there's no need to eat shmur after the first night. And according to the Rambam, there would be a proper thing to do would be to eat shmur the whole week. So some people follow that chum and others don't.
According to the Rambam, better use machine matzah because you could probably get a better idea.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's hard to. Although there were some who had the practice dafka to insist on machine matzah because of that concern, it's kind of hard to explain away that cheetah because lemaisa until machines came, they ate hair matzah. So Moshe Rabbeinu did not eat machine matzah. So when the Rambam didn't eat machine matzah and Rashi didn't eat machine matzah, so we're eating hand matzah the same way they ate hand matzah for 3,000 years. So wherever they watched it, so we watch it, we're comfortable with that. There are some who had these extra kapeta, they wouldn't touch hand matzah anymore. Once you have machine matzah is better. But again, it's very hard to explain why that should be so. With Lamaisa, everybody ate hand matzah for thousands of years. I remember I was once in went to visit the city of Gier in Poland. So anyone been there? The city of Gier. So there's the Beis Medrash of the Gier Rebbe from before the war is still intact. And there's not that much there, but they still have a matzah oven that the Gier Rebbe used to use before the war is upstairs in the attic, still there. So when we came there, we were told that there was a film company from Eretz Yisrael that was making like a documentary or something about Poland. So they wanted to film the Gier Rebbe's matzah bakery. So they wanted to make it look a little bit more realistic, so they put some piece of matzah into the oven to make it look like they just hadn't been used in 70 years, but they wanted to make it look like it was just baking matzahs. So the people who were filming didn't know too much. They put some square matzahs, they put some machine matzahs into the Ger Rebbe's hand matzah bakery. So that was the Ger Rebbe's matzahs. The Streitz matzahs were, that's the name. So it looked a little bit foolish. But in Ger, they ate hand matzahs, the Hasidim, they won't touch machine matzahs. Where some of the hardcore litvaks won't touch hand matzahs, and then everybody else in the middle will eat everything. So we assume that's all okay. Sometimes you see on the machine matzahs, it'll say 18-minute matzahs. So what does that mean? Isn't it after 18 minutes is chametz? What does 18 minutes? 18-minute matzahs means that they're extra careful to clean all the machinery within 18 minutes, and they don't rely on bittel. It means even though if you don't clean the machines all the time, so then there may be some little pieces of dough that gets stuck from the last batch, it gets mixed into the next batch. So some are very careful about that, and others are not so careful about that. How can we not be careful? Doesn't the Gemara say chametz for Pesach is also b'mashahu? So the Rishonim point out that only means if it was baked on Pesach, if it was batel from before Pesach, then the chametz is taka batel like anything else, batel the b'shishim. So that's how we pass the mikra din, that if you have a chametz, a tarobus of chametz, if it's if the items get mixed together, mamish, what's called lach balach, it all gets mushed in together. So as long as it happened before Pesach, then we're not so worried about it. So those people who buy regular matzahs, they're not machped, it says on 18-minute matzahs. So the cheaper matzahs, so those matzahs are relying potentially on bittul. There may be bittul b'shishim taking place, which is okay. Mikra din, the Ramah says, is okay. And those who are machped, that they only eat the matzahs, let's say on the 18-minute matzahs, so they are being chayshish for the Rambam sheet that says that would still be a problem. Even though it was baked from before Pesach, it would still be also b'masha once Pesach comes. So again, it's a chumrah, it's not mikra. So there are different standards of masas on the market. They're the regular plain, and they go buy a regular box of striped masas. So they're relying on the fact that it's not necessarily shmura, and that's okay. And they're relying on the fact that there may be a little bit of chametz got mixed in into the, we don't know about it, it's possible, but it's going to be bottled elafafi alafim, so we're not too worried about that either. Then if you want to buy the matzahs, that's the 18-minute matzahs on them, so then that's one chumrah. Then you want to insist on buying shmur matzahs, that's another chumrah. So in life, generally speaking, you pay for chumrah. So as the chumras go up, the matzahs get more expensive. And then those who want to have hand matzahs, so those hand matzahs are going to be three times the price. Again, depending on what your opinion is on these chumras, it's going to cost you a lot of money to make Pesach. Okay, good. Any other mitzvahs of Pesach tonight? What else did we talk about? So we spoke about matzah a little bit, we spoke about mar a little bit, zakos a little bit. I think we spoke about that yesterday. No, what did we do? Haseba. Okay, so Haseba is a mitzvah midirabbanan, except according to the Rambam, sounds like it's a deraisa. The Mishnah in the end of the beginning of Avraham Pesachim says, "Leyochel other matzah yaseh." You have to do a seiba on Pesach night. So there's the famous view of the Rav Yah that the Rav Yah says that this mitzvah doesn't apply b'zman hazeh because haseiba is supposed to be a demonstration of chayrus. B'zman hazeh, nobody leans this way. In the ancient world, it was common to lean this way. So therefore, Chazal instituted to make haseiba kederach hamalachim. B'zman hazeh, even the richest people, the kings, don't lean anymore. So therefore, it's not a mitzvah at all. So most of the Rishonim disagree with the Rav Yah. So we try to do aseiba b'zman hazeh. When push comes to shove, let's say a person forgot to do aseiba something. So when it comes to matzah, we would tell him to do it again. When it comes to the kaisis, we would tell him to do it again. But if it's the end of the seder, the third or the fourth kos, so then we have problems because you're not supposed to be mosif al kos to the end of the seder. So then maybe we would tell him the Ramah quotes, and maybe we would tell him to forget about it. So he drank to that kos without aseiba, it's not the end of the world. You could rely on the Rav Yah. The Ramah quotes a custom that the women rely on the Rav Yah. How that works, that's a whole nother shtickle tarik. Look in the safe, we spoke about that a little bit. But so in the certain circumstances, we rely on the Rav Yah Shita. But Lechet Chila, we try to perform Haseba properly. Haseba is necessary at Matzah, it's necessary at the Dalek Kais, it's necessary at the Koman. Mora, the Gemara says, ain't our Haseba. Mora would be silly to do Haseba. Mora is a Derech Avdos. You're not supposed to be doing Derech Heiros when you're fulfilling the mitzvah of Mora. One mitzvah we didn't talk about yet is Sipur Tirus Mitzrayim. Mitzvah takes up most of the time. So we gave some Vertlach yesterday, but we didn't talk about the Yetzer mitzvah itself. So the mitzvah of Sipur Tirus Mitzrayim is a mitzvah that's special on Pesach night, notwithstanding the fact that there's a mitzvah throughout the year to talk about Yetzer Mitzrayim. There are a few unique qualities of Sipur Tirus Mitzrayim on Leil Tes Vav Nisan. So what exactly are those qualities? So there are different opinions. What exactly the characteristics of Sipur are different than Zechira. So Reb Chaim lists off a whole bunch of differences. Reb Chaim says that on Pesach night we find that the Sipur has to be Derech Sheilu Tshuva. You open up with a question and you give answers. So Chazal wanted to make it easy for you, so they instituted the Manishtan and they gave you the basic questions of Pesach night. If you want to ask more questions, ask more questions. Kishalcha Binchot, these are not the only questions. These are good model questions to get the conversation rolling, but there should be more questions. So Derech Sheilu Tshuva. On the regular night, when I say the third Parsha Kriyishma, I don't ask any questions. I just say, Yeshem HaKashem HaTeit Yisrael, it's just a mitzvah Zechira. But on Pesach night, it's a mitzvah of Sipur. Sipur requires Derech Sheilu Tshuva. There is a question to Poskim whether Kol HaMarbe L'Saper applies on the rest of the year. The rest of the year, we don't give such a long arichos. We just say very, very quickly, we try and Galtana, we say, Yeshem HaKashem HaTeit, and then we move on. Pesach night, we sit for hours and we tell over Langa Megillas, so that's because, according to many, there's a mitzvah called Marbel Sapra only applies on Pesach night. And there's a Mishkios Yaakov who says, no, the Kolam Marbel applies the rest of the year also. So that's what we say, Alom Bikas Kriyashma, we elaborate upon Tis and Tribe. But again, even when we elaborate upon it every day and every night, it's nowhere near, unless you have a very, very long Kriyashma, a very, very short say, that's nowhere near the same. So we go out of our way to be Kolam Marbel Sapra. On Pesach night, the Reb Chaim claims it has to be Maskeh B'Gnus V'Sayim B'Shevach. That's what the Mishnah says. Reb Chaim says that's part of the mitzvah of Sipur. That Sipur means it has to have a whole plot, a whole story, a whole development. So when you write a book, you write a story, so it's a long, long story. You have to have beginnings of the story and ends of the story. When it comes to Yetzias Mitzrayim, every day and every night, just a quick reference, on Yeshem L'Kechem, it's a Kiddush. We don't tell a whole story Kiddush. We don't make a Langa Megillah. We just say, today's Shabbos Kodesh, Zechut Yetzias Mitzrayim, Zechut my celebrations, and call it a day. Whereas when it comes to Sipur at the Seder, Chaim says you have to have a beginning and an end and a whole development of a plot. So you have to have Maschel B'Gnusu U'Mitzayim B'Shevach. There's a Mechlekes. whether the gnus and shevach are physical or spiritual, so we combine both into our seder. But there has to be elaboration, and there has to be a story, and there has to be the achshavah tshuva. All of this goes into the mitzvah of sipritzias mitzrayim. When we say that kolamar b'lasap b'tzid mitzrayim reizim meshubach, so there some achronim will say that kolamar b'lasap means even after the zman of mitzvah is over. Usually we think that there's a zman mesuyam to any given mitzvah. I wouldn't say it's a nice idea to blow shofar after Rosh Hashanah. That's called Bal Tosif. It's a nice idea to eat in the sukkah after sukkah. That's called Bal Tosif. But when it comes to Pesach night, so even if the technical zman of the mitzvah is over, that's all included in the kiyum of Kol HaMar B'Lasaper. That's the famous word that's explained at the Leila Seder, why Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was still at the Seder in Bnei Brak until the morning, because Kol Osa Laila, even though his shita was that it was over, it in Chatzos, so he was still fulfilling Kol HaMar B'Lasaper. That's why even Rabbi Akiva, who was the Rav in Bnei Brak, he was going past Alos HaShachar, because the Talmidim stopped him and he gives Man Kriyash Moshel Shachris. So Man Kriyash Moshel Shachris is after Alos HaShachar. It's Misha Yakir. So how come they didn't stop at Alos HaShachar? So some say the same word, that they wanted to make a little bit of a Kolamar, and that was called Kolamar B'Lasafir. It could be the source of the question was a funny question. It gives the implication of the question is that Rabbi Akiva was looking at Maizmanim and he had his watch on with his second hand and he should have stopped at Alos HaShachar. In the olden days, who knew what time it was? They were sitting inside, it was dark inside, so until the Talmidim came from outside and told them that he gives Man Kriyash, but they had no idea what time it was. But those who asked the Kasha are assuming that the Tanaim inside knew exactly what time it was, and they were still going even past this month. So again, that's the question, what kind of halacha that is, but some say that idea of Kol HaMar B'Lasaper. That's what the Poskim say, that even after the Seder is over, so the more the merrier, the more you talk, the better it is. There are some more makbid that when they continue after the seder is over, they leave some matzah on the table, because the Gemara says lechem oini lechem she'emel of dvarim harbe, that the context of the sipur should be dafka in the context of the matzah. Should have some matzah around on the table throughout the night. Some are makbid to leave the matzah on the table until the end of the seder, and some continue learning and talking to the Dvarim afterwards. So some people are makbid, they say the briskerov is makbid to leave off the matzah on the table for the duration of the evening, as long as one is still being misabed.
Are there people at the Seder who we know didn't see
Berachas
Torah today? Is it still
just spending
time in Torah?
Yeah, we're going to stop at the Seder and announce Berachas Torah, but they don't know what you're talking about. So we assume it's the hero, they're just listening, they're not really talking. No, what are you going to do? If you can say Berachas Torah, that's wonderful. The Rav said that's why you say Baruch HaMachom at the Seder. Baruch HaMachom, Moshe Nasan Torah, Am Yisrael. So that's like a Berachas Torah. It's not really a bracha. So the Rav said, because since we're about to embark upon darshing the psukim, it's going to be a whole new level of limud Torah, so you have to make a shtickle b'chus Torah on it. So I guess they're relying on that, but that's not really good for b'chus Torah, because it's not a shem machus. So no, I don't know. I have to figure out how to deal with doing that. Okay, good. Any last questions about the Seder, about anything else? We have a minig that many people don't say the full Kriyash Malamita, so we say a Mapil and say the first Pasha. Whatever is the Ikra Din of Kriyash Malamita is only the Mapil and the first Pasha. All the other Pesukim are Minhagim, so many people forego that on the Seder night.
Brushing your teeth after.
But it's better not to brush your teeth or to use mouthwash after the Seder. It should be Tom, the Mapil should remain in your path.
But I assume the morning is off.
The morning is okay. It can be in the morning. New Chumra. Can't brush your teeth till next Pesach. Okay. Good. All right. Okay, wish everyone a wonderful one. Yom HaKashas Sameach. Okay, Mr. Shem, when does Shem continue? When do we start again?
Monday.
Monday, no, not this Monday. Right? Next, okay. Following Monday again, we start.